KKIM, AM 1000, Albuquerque. KKIM, FM, 94.7, Santa Fe. KARS, AM 860, Berlin. Your home for Christian news and talk.
KKIM and KARS now present New Mexico News and Views, a look at world events that affect the Christian way of life. Now, here's your host, Dewey Modi.
All right, thank you very much, Jimmy. It's 4:27 on this Tuesday afternoon, November 15th, 2011. KKIM Cars Radio bringing you the news you need to know. Check out our website, NewMexicoNewsAndViews.com. And we have a very special guest. I call him that because he's not on as much as we'd like, but when you get him, it is a pleasure, extreme pleasure, to have our friend from Las Cruces on with us, and that's Heath Hosmussen of nmpolitics.net. Heath, thanks for being with us here today on New Mexico News and Views.
I'm happy to be here.
And hey, Heath, have you heard that Oregon's lawn chair balloonist has put off his flight in Iraq until next year? I'd like to see you on that lawn chair balloon there, Heath. Ken Couch.
I think that'd be scary.
Yeah, I think Kent Couch made headlines worldwide in 2008 when he flew a lawn chair supported by more than 150 helium-filled party balloons from the parking lot of the gas station he owns in Bend, Oregon, to an Idaho field 235 miles east. He had planned another balloon flight today in Baghdad, along with an Iraqi daredevil, but a statement came out today from a spokesman that said that the two have delayed the flight until March to accommodate a number of groups that want to use it to raise awareness of the plight of Iraqi orphans. And that certainly is a good cause.
Sounds like it.
You know, I know that you have a young daughter, and, you know, just to I want you to hear this, Heath, because I think our society has just become almost deaf to the cry of a child. And listen to this.
Gather, Father, watch again, watch again. Thank you for your food. Thank you for your food. Amen. Amen.
What's that do to you, Heath?
You know, I've been, as a journalist, I've covered police and things like that and a number of child abuse cases, child abuse resulting in death. And, you know, and reading some of the headlines out of the sports world in Pennsylvania and, you know, just some of the things that people do to children are just heartbreaking. I wish that we as a society, you know, both through our government and policies and things they can do, and also as churches and other nonprofit organizations would really come together and just do more to take care of them and make sure that they're safe.
Amen.
And that they can grow up in an atmosphere that is, you know, conducive to them reaching their potential.
Amen. That's my little friend Haley Bates from Memphis, Tennessee. She stopped in here, the Radio Ranch. Her and her mother and dad and surprised Uncle Dewey that they were, you know, they really surprised me. And Haley sang that song for us, that prayer on the air. It was just really makes your heart soft and it lowers that blood pressure, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
You're talking about the horrible news about children, Heath. An Albuquerque two-year-old is in critical condition after police said the little girl's father slashed her throat. I can't even imagine.
No. And I'll tell you, it's one thing to in a fit of rage do something awful to a child, and I've certainly written about several cases like that. And then once in a while you come across a child abuse case that is abuse over months and months that was much more than a fit of rage you might regret afterward and is really systemic. It's hard for me to even picture those people as human, and it's important to remember that they are, and they became that kind of a person. Mm-hmm. You know, things happen in their lives, but it's hard to think of people like that as anything but monsters, I think.
Yeah, and then we had this story also this morning on KKIM with Frank Haley. A mother says her 7-year-old son was out of control at Mary Ann Binford Elementary School on Monday, and the son suffers from autism. But there's a debate over the alleged way APS police controlled the situation. The mother said that when she showed up at the school, her son was sitting on a chair with his hands handcuffed behind his back. Mm-hmm. She said there were two APS police officers and two teachers in the room, and this little boy was wiggling and crying and autism. That's what he suffers from, this seven-year-old. That's very sad, too.
Yeah, very.
So, Heath, what do you think? What has happened that we have news like this day? What has happened to this society?
You know, in some ways, I don't think it's anything new. Although it certainly feels like crimes like these are on the rise. And I think part of that is the globalization of news and we are a smaller society today, a more connected society. So we have more access to stories about a girl who gets kidnapped in the Midwest and vanishes, or college students who even go overseas and vanish and things like that. At the same time, I do think that these really outrageous, shocking crimes, they illustrate sort of a breakdown of certain values in our society.
In our families, yes. In our families.
Yeah. I'm one who says it takes a family, it takes a community. Sometimes conservatives and liberals argue over which one it takes, and I say it takes both. We need stronger families. We also need stronger communities that are more willing to help out families in need. I could tell you, covering child abuse cases, you can look at these houses in which this abuse happened, and so often they're in communities where the family was isolated for whatever reason, and a lot of them are smaller communities where the only things in town might be a post office and a Catholic church in New Mexico, and not a lot of community centers, transportation was hard, just people in tough situations and not a lot of people right around them to reach out and see what was going on and either report it to authorities or help out in some other way, whether it's help the family out financially or whatever it may be. So I think we need stronger families and communities in America.
Amen, and stronger churches. Heath, before we get to the weather and traffic, I want your take on the headlines in the Albuquerque Journal, the picture of our governor in Mexico, and the governor clarifies immigrant ancestry. What's behind her trip to Mexico? I know that she went down there to honor her grandfather, but what do you make of this story and this travel to Mexico?
She made national news weeks ago, months ago, I can't remember exactly how long ago, in essentially admitting that one of her ancestors had come to the United States illegally because of an AL that was written on his immigration records. And in researching and going back to dig deeper into that, they found that doesn't necessarily mean illegal at all, or didn't at the time, 80 or so years ago. So they're now saying, wait a minute, the media showed us that and said that's what it meant, so that's why she admitted that he came illegally, but really now they realize that was wrong. I haven't done the research myself, but from what I've read, it sounds like you're comparing apples to oranges. The way we looked at immigration 80 years ago to what we think of it now, the terms illegal alien or undocumented immigrant or whatever you want to call it, didn't really exist back then. The border was much more porous in a way that society accepted. I frankly don't get too worked up about this debate about whether her ancestors came here legally or not. I think we all have that in our past, unless our ancestors are American Indians.
So basically, she went to this trip down to Mexico to put this issue to bed. That's it.
Well,
enough.
She also has a great grandfather who fired the first shot in the Mexican Revolution, and they're celebrating the anniversary of the Mexican Revolution. So she went down to the state of Chihuahua for that. And it's also just common for the governor of New Mexico and the governor of Chihuahua to have some kind of relationship. There's cross border trade down here in Doniana County. The state of New Mexico has been working for decades to build industrial park and move the rail yard, the rail hub over from El Paso into New Mexico. That's now happening. That requires a lot of cooperation between these two governors to build up the community on both sides of the border so that everybody benefits economically.
Yeah. The number of Mexicans leaving home for the United States is just about canceled out by the number returning, according to stats provided by the Mexican government. The stats suggest that a bleak job market in America, combined with the risk of getting arrested, has prevented many Mexicans from crossing into the United States. Your take on that?
Well, one of the interesting things about that is that this president has actually gone further, Democrat Obama, than previous administrations in seeking out and deporting those people. So we've seen a pretty strong immigration crackdown, regardless of which political party controls the White House, going on for quite a while now, getting stronger and stronger. We've increased the number of agents on the border exponentially, and it is becoming more difficult to cross. And you know, I still think there's something to the argument that former Governor Bill Richardson and others made, that if you build a 10-foot wall, they'll build an 11-foot ladder, that you're never going to seal off the border completely, but you certainly can slow it down. And it seems like we've done that pretty significantly. And the economy tanking, if your goal is to slow illegal immigration, the economy tanking seems to help that.
Heath, would you stick with us as we check weather and traffic, all right?
Absolutely.
All right. It is 4:38 here on KKIM and Cars Radio, New Mexico News and Views. Here's Misty Miles with traffic.
We're off to a good start this afternoon. Freeway traffic looks okay through the Big Eye. Just busy I-25 both directions by Comanche. Crossing the river on Paseo, not looking too bad right now. I'm Misty Miles with live and local traffic on New Mexico's Christian Heritage Station, KKIM.
All right, Misty, thank you very much. Big John's Barbecue in the parking lot of New Beginnings Church at the intersection of Montgomery and Carlisle. Call 203-1539, 203-1539 to arrange catering. Look for Big John's Barbecue Trailer at Carlisle and Montgomery. The best barbecue in town. Mm-mm, good. Albuquerque 58 right now, 37 for a low tonight. Rio Rancho 56, a low tonight of 33. Santa Fe 50, a low tonight of 28. Espanola 50 degrees, 28 for a low tonight. 59 in Belen and Las Lunas right now. And Al is outside sunbathing, 34 for a low tonight. Bernalillo 57, low tonight 33. Taos 50, low tonight 23. A low tonight of 26 in Raton right now, 48 degrees. It's 44 in Cuesta with a low tonight of 23. 50 in Glorieta with a low of 28. Las Vegas 54, 30 for a low tonight. Abiquiu's reporting 50 degrees with a low of tonight of 30 degrees. 29 tonight in Tijeras, 51 currently. 37 degrees in Chama, 18 for a low. Los Alamos, 50, a low tonight of 33. Grants, 53, a low tonight of 29. Gallup, 52, a low tonight of 26. Santa Rosa, 66, low tonight of 37. TRC, 63, a low tonight of 41. And Edgewood, Moriarty, 50, low tonight, 29. Fort Sumner, 65, low tonight, 35. Farmington, 50, low tonight, 29. Alamosa, 46, low tonight, 18. Durango, 45, low tonight, 21. Window Rock, Arizona, 49 degrees and a low tonight of 26. Sunny skies and dry is our forecast. Albuquerque, Rio Rancho, as the worst drought in recorded history in our state continues. Wednesday in Albuquerque, Rio Rancho, sunny and 57, 36 Thursday. More sun, up to 62 on Friday. So highs of 57 both Wednesday and Thursday with lows around 36. It could warm up to 65 by Saturday. Santa Fe, Wednesday, sunny 47 and 26. Thursday, 50 and 30. Los Alamos, sunny skies, 48 and 31, up to 50 for Thursday, a low of 35. Espanola, Wednesday, sunny and 54, low tonight. Make that low tonight on Wednesday, 27. Thursday, sunny and 56, a low of 31. Belen and Las Lunas, Wednesday, 58 and sunny, a low of 31. Thursday, 60 and a low of 34, up to 65 for Saturday, says the weatherman. That is a check of our weather and traffic on KKIM. It's 4:41. Here's Pastor Paul.
This is Pastor Paul Hull bringing you the news from a biblical perspective. Former Penn State defensive coordinator Jerry Sandusky has been accused of doing the unthinkable with young boys and is reported to have some 40 or more charges filed against him. These despicable acts have engulfed most of the Penn State football program, including head coach Joe Paterno. The firestorm has moved the students to protest and stand up for their team leadership. Jesus was explicit about what would happen to those that hurt and corrupt little children. He said it would be better for them to have a millstone around their neck and be tossed into the sea. When we fail to condemn such evil behavior, we join the evildoers in their debauchery. While Mr. Sandusky is due a fair trial and due process, if he should fail to stand against these charges, his punishment should be severe. The Lord would demand no less. Bringing you the news you need to know on KKIM and Cars Radio, I'm Pastor Paul Holt. You can find out the latest news on NewMexicoNewsAndViews.com.
The Ten Commandments can stay. I'm Audrey Bright. Americans United for Separation of Church and State has settled with Johnson County, Tennessee, over a display that included the Ten Commandments. It's in the county courthouse lobby. CitizenLink's Bruce HouseConnect says,
when the public goes into the courthouse, they will see a copy of the Ten Commandments on the wall as one of the origins of and foundations of our government and its laws.
The only catch is that opposing viewpoints to the Ten Commandments must also be displayed. Focusing on the right things. Americans are planning on spending less this Christmas, but most say they do plan on helping the needy. World Vision did the survey. Tracy Coker is director of the group's gift catalog.
Americans are wanting their gifts to make a difference.
If you've not seen the catalog, it's definitely worth a look. Go to worldvisiongifts.org. That's worldvisiongifts.org. It'll change how you think about every other gift. This is Family News in Focus.
Before the season takes a bite from your schedule, call Dr. Mark Walker. He'll take care of your dental needs and leave you with a holiday smile that's merry and bright. Caring families count on Dr. Mark Walker. You'll like the difference. 881-0334.
This portion of New Mexico News and Views is brought to you by Dr. Mark Walker. It has been said there was a cross in the heart of God long before the cross was erected at Calvary. As we think about it, we will be overwhelmed at the wonder and greatness of His love for us.
The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is calling many to come and experience the beauty of His holiness in the land of promise, Eretz Israel. Sun Broadcasting Partners in Prayer invites you to worship the Lord with us as we travel through the land of the Bible. You'll stand on the Mount of Olives, walk the Via Dolorosa, visit Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum, and much more. We'll join the CUFI Jerusalem Summit and Solidarity Rally, hike to the Falls of En Gedi, and experience the wonders of the Dead Sea. Make plans now to join us for this life-changing experience, March 13th through the 25th, 2012. Call today, 345-1991, or visit us online at sunbroadcasting.cc to reserve your space and see all that's included in a once-in-a-lifetime trip at a very affordable price. Visit Israel. You'll never be the same.
New Mexico News and Views now continues on KKIM and KARS. Please send us your comments and story ideas by going to mykkim.com.
It's 4:45 here on this Tuesday afternoon. Dewey Modi with you, and Heath Hosmussen is live with us from Las Cruces, and we appreciate that very much. Heath, we're learning today that the confirmation of a former aide to Attorney General Eric Holder to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces may be in trouble over his response to questions posed by Arizona Senator John McCain about his knowledge of Operation Fast and Furious. Kevin Olson, who worked as Holder's chief of staff from January 2009 to January 2011, faces a confirmation hearing on Thursday for the post. The panel with jurisdiction is the Senate Armed Services Committee, of which McCain is the ranking Republican and Senator Carl Levin, Democrat Michigan, is chairman. In response Monday to a questionnaire sent by McCain last week, both obtained by Fox News, Olson said he knew nothing about the operation while he was at the Justice Department. Your comment on this story that is developing as we speak.
Well, as we speak, I got an email from Congressman Pierce's office calling for Eric Holder to resign because of these questions. And let me just read here. Multiple ATF agents have testified that they were ordered to let the weapons go, even though they requested permission to seize them. I think this issue it raises some very good questions about who knew that this was happening. It shouldn't have been happening. I mean, there are weapons from Columbus, New Mexico, in the criminal case we had down there with elected officials who were helping smuggle weapons into Mexico that got into Mexico, and we haven't seen a tie with Operation Fast and Furious, but it raises some very good questions about U.S. law enforcement letting weapons purchased in America go into Mexico to try to trace them to people who are going to use them to kill people. I mean, do people die in the meantime? Yes. So I think there's some very good questions about who knew this, who authorized it, how did it happen, and the Justice Department definitely needs to ensure that this isn't going to happen again.
You know, Heath, thank you for that breaking news. Pierce calling for the resignation of Eric Holder. What's your take on Occupy? You know, Wall Street is occupied no more. A New York City judge has upheld City Hall's decision to evict protesters from Zuccotti Park, denying a court order issued by attorneys on their behalf. So your take on this movement?
I've been watching it for weeks. I went to the Occupy Las Cruces protest a few weeks ago. I'm really interested in what's going on, and I had this debate with someone this morning who says there's no similarities between the Occupy movement and the Tea Party movement, and I don't agree. I think they definitely may have some different goals. They may disagree on what the problem is, but they agree that there's a problem, and I think in a lot of ways they're talking about the same problem in Washington, just different aspects of it, whether you're talking about corporations or the governments. You know, there's a controlling force in this country that a lot of people are fed up with. And, I've sort of compared it to during the Revolutionary War. It's not as if everyone was on the same ideological page, but at some point they agreed that the king needed to go, and they got together and figured out a way to make it happen. And in that case, that involved a war. But, you know, and then they put together a constitution that required them to hash out their differences. And we have a Congress that is supposed to sit down and work out the differences to come to some kind of agreement. But it started from this point where what they could agree on was that the king needed to go, and they banded together to do it. So I think there are a lot of people in this country with different ideologies that can agree that something is very wrong with our society and needs to change.
Yeah, don't count on Congress coming to any sort of agreement.
My
goodness.
They don't seem to do it very often.
Yeah, my goodness. Heath, you have a story posted on your website, nmpolitics.net. And a story that I'm very interested in. We've talked about it here on this program. The headline is Push to Pay Legislators May Be Gaining Momentum. Tell us about this.
Well, I wrote a column in September arguing that we should pay our state legislators. I didn't say it should be a full-time salary. I'm not interested in people who get elected and then go live in Santa Fe full-time and lose touch with their districts. But paying people a part-time salary, and I suggested maybe $25,000, still requires that they do something else to make a living, but it gives them some freedom to take time off and do the job of a legislator. It would increase the pool of people who could be legislators right now. You know, it's lawyers, it's businessmen who can afford to take some time off, it's educators, it's people who are retired. There's some others, but a lot of different segments of the population are excluded and are not represented in our citizen legislature. So I think you get a more diverse views in the legislature if you pay them. You take away any arguments against other entitlements like gifts from lobbyists. You take away the expectation that because we don't get paid, we're going to milk our per diem for all it's worth. I would hope that you get a more efficient and ethical legislature out of it. Now, this weekend, the Albuquerque Journal endorsed the idea of putting the question to voters, saying voters should decide whether to pay their legislators. We had a state representative, Mo Maestas from Albuquerque, say he supports it. The executive director of Common Cause saying he supports it. Those were both in an article published in the Las Cruces Sun News. So it seems like some of the state's media is starting to pay more attention to this issue.
Yeah, your statement was, I argued that our unpaid legislators can't keep up with the governor or the pace of life in the 21st century, no matter how hard they work.
The previous governor and the current governor, different in some ways, but both very strong executives. We have a very strong executive branch, and we have unpaid legislators with a lot fewer staffers, not really able to keep up as a check on the executive branch. We don't have equal branches of government, I don't think. And then the other thing is, life moves a lot more quickly in the 21st century. When our Constitution designed a legislature that would meet once a year, but every other year only to pass a budget and only to deal with other policy issues once every 2 years, life moved a lot more slowly. And today, things happen quickly, and we don't have a legislature that can quickly respond to them. So I think we need one.
Well, I'm 56, and I'm having a hard time with this new phone called whatever it is. For heaven's sakes, yes, technology is moving too fast even for me. Hey, Heath, one other thing I'd like you to comment on the governor is, this story that was discussed in the Albuquerque Journal about this, when she goes out of state, goes to El Paso to visit her family, the lieutenant governor has to take over the office of the governor. I believe that's way outdated. Do you?
Well, Richardson was the first governor to, when he was running for president, argue that I govern from my BlackBerry, so I can do it from Iowa just as well as I can do it from Santa Fe. And I think in a lot of ways that is a valid point.
Yeah.
I run a news website that I could run from Las Cruces where I live, or Santa Fe when I'm at the Roundhouse, or Europe, as long as I had an internet connection.
Yeah.
In Susana Martinez's case, it's even more interesting because anytime she goes to El Paso, 5 miles outside of New Mexico, to visit her dad, she's not the governor. John Sanchez is, and even though she's back in New Mexico in 5 minutes if she needs to be. So it presents a really interesting situation, and I think she has an argument that I'm not sure. I don't have a position on the issue, but I think her argument is one that's at least worth consideration.
Yeah. How do you think that relationship is going between the governor and John Sanchez?
They seem to not like each other, or she at least seems to not like him. I mean, she's been very vocal about. She hasn't given him a big role in her administration.
You never hear anything about him.
He hasn't taken a big role either. Diane Dennis grabbed a big role in the Richardson administration, whether he wanted her to or not. She was very visible with children's issues and some other things. He hasn't really done that. She's not happy with him running for Senate. She hasn't endorsed Heather Wilson in the primary, but she said he needs to be here focusing on this job if that's what he's going to do, and if he's not, he needs to not have the job.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the governor's doing at this point?
I think her approval rating remains good. We haven't seen a poll in the last few weeks, but the last one remained high. I mean, this is an interesting state. We're a swing state, and hers and President Obama's approval ratings have both remained relatively high. Hers even higher than his. So people like what she's doing. On the flip side, she hasn't been very successful policy-wise and so far. And the interesting thing is that your first year is usually the easiest year. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier with her and Bill Richardson both having very dominant personalities and the legislature not being able to keep up. And the Senate really dug its heels in against Richardson, in part because they couldn't keep up with him, and their only way to really be a check on government was to oppose him. And there were personality issues and other things, but he left office with the executive branch having a very poor relationship with the state Senate, and Martinez seems to have picked up right where Richardson left off. She's fairly combative. She's tossed this implicit threat out all along that the polls are on my side, and you need to do what I want or else. And the or else seems to be I'll spend my PAC's money to try to elect someone to replace you in 2012. And the legislature has essentially said, yeah, let's see you try. So I think we're setting up this scenario in 2012 where we will see her PAC try to defeat some visible legislators, and it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, Jerome Block is back in jail at last report, and we learned today that Democratic State Legislator Al Park is running for the Albuquerque area seat on the Public Regulation Commission. Any surprise there?
No. We've known for a while that Representative Park was going to do that, and I read his news release a little while ago, and he says he's running for the PRC for the purpose of reforming it and trying to fix some of these problems.
And that thing does have problems.
It's huge problems.
Yeah,
and I'll tell you, Al Park has been a reformer in the state house, and so he does have a background in sitting down and brainstorming and negotiating. He's a Democrat, but negotiating with Republicans to try to come to compromise reform. I watched him do it with former Minority Whip Dan Foley and some others on reforming the housing authority when that scandal was really big. So it'll be interesting to see if he gets elected and if he is elected, if he has any success in reforming things.
All right, why is Gary Johnson still in the race? And I ask that question because he is filing complaints with both the Federal Election Commission and the Federal Communications Commission over his exclusion from Saturday's Republican debate. Why is he still running?
Why not? I mean, Gary Johnson has, I think, for the most part, always succeeded at what he's tried to do, and he's clearly not going to succeed at becoming president. But he's shining some interesting attention on some interesting issues with our system. There was a magazine article I read about him a few weeks ago that essentially talked about him as a candidate who, because of his candidacy, is shining light on how convoluted our system is and how it excludes lesser-known candidates. And really one of the absurd things, I think, is that former governor from New Mexico versus former governor from Utah, for example, and they're treated totally differently. Why? They're roughly the same place in the polls, and I think Johnson's candidacy is illustrative of the mainstream media playing a negative role in society. They looked at this guy and said, favors legalizing drugs. He'd never win a Republican primary. We're going to decide he's not a serious candidate. And they decided it instead of letting the American people decide it.
They like to do things like that. One last question, Heath. You know, this campaign so far has been full of surprises. You know, the downfall of Rick Perry, Herman Cain's deal. Now, you know, the resurrection of Newt Gingrich. And we here at the Radio Ranch have, you know, seen that he's been raising up, and he now is, I think, the favorite on the Republican side. What's your thoughts on the resurrection of Newt Gingrich?
Well, I frankly think with religious values voters, he could have some problems, particularly with more moderate ones who see Obama as a churchgoer who's married and has kids and has remained faithful to his wife as far as the public knows. There is a contrast there with Newt Gingrich's past. It would be kind of interesting. That said, I think that going back to Bill Clinton's days, I think the overall electorate is becoming less sensitive to personal issues like that. My suspicion is the Democrats would love to run against Newt Gingrich. Because of the contrast they could paint, because of scandal in his past, I tell you that the Obama campaign is sending out stuff about Mitt Romney trying to tear him down, and it seems that they would not like for him to be the nominee. You know, Romney and Obama are two moderate politicians. when you're talking about getting independent voters, and you contrast healthcare with healthcare, for example, they don't look that much different, even though Mitt Romney would like you to believe otherwise. They don't seem to want to run against Mitt Romney. So, I don't know how the Republican primary is going to come out. It seems like every week it changes, and I think that's mostly illustrative of there not being an obvious superstar of a candidate who is, is just the right person at the right time to take on Obama.
I think a lot of people thought Herman Cain was going to be that super candidate.
And, you know, he could come back. I'm not convinced that these allegations are going to take him down. They certainly hurt him, and I think, there's enough out there that the American public should take a second and very critical look at him. But, I think with a field that's so in flux and without there being an obvious candidate, he rose very quickly.
Yeah.
He could fall a little. He could learn from what's happened and come back again. The primary's not here yet.
Have you ever seen a candidate rise up so fast to get so much publicity? Rick Perry, people want him to run. I wanted him to run and then fall so fast.
He you have to be able to debate.
Yeah.
You have to be articulate. You have to be able to tell voters what you want to do. Even if they think you're making it up or they don't trust you, they still want to hear you be able to answer
my.
The question.
Yeah.
That's a very basic thing.
I'd hate to have him be asked the question, sir, should we push the button now?
Right.
Any question. Yeah.
I mean, he's been a disaster at the debates.
It's been horrible.
It's sad for him because we've certainly had presidents in the past who were not or would not have been good debaters. But in the 21st century with media what it is, That's a skill you have to have.
All right, now I'm going to throw this at you, and then we got to wrap it up. We're running way beyond, but I just love talking to you. I really believe that Newt Gingrich would beat Obama in a debate. He's much more intelligent than Obama.
Well, you're talking to someone who thinks Obama is very intelligent, but Newt Gingrich can hold his own, too. I would like to see that debate.
I would love to see that debate. And